I'm Tommy McNeil. Elections officials are counting votes in Hong Kong's district council elections after months of pro-democracy demonstrations. VOA's Marissa Melton has more.
Hong Kong pro-democracy forces appear headed for a landslide victory in local elections that saw record turnout, delivering a stunning rebuke to Beijing. Early voting results Monday showed pro-democracy candidates winning nearly every seat they contested in Hong Kong's 18 district councils. It's the latest evidence of continued public support for a five-month-old pro-democracy movement that has been speaking out against control of Hong Kong by Beijing. The vote will not significantly change the balance of power in Hong Kong, but the district council vote is seen as one of the most reliable indicators of public opinion, since it's the only fully democratic election in Hong Kong. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
More than three dozen people reported dead in a series of security-related incidents in Afghanistan, including a fatal attack on a UN vehicle in the capital. Several of the dead were civilians. Afghan officials said Sunday that Taliban rebels assaulted a security outpost in a province overnight, killing eight soldiers and wounding four others. Senior provincial authorities claimed the ensuing firefight also killed at least 20 assailants, though the Taliban disputed those claims. Meanwhile, doctors and residents in western Farah province said an Afghan government airstrike has killed at least nine civilians and injured several more. Emergency officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say at least 26 people died when an airplane crashed shortly after takeoff Sunday. The 19-seat 228 aircraft, operated by a local company, Busy Bee, crashed into a residential area near Goma Airport. Several of the victims were on the ground when the plane came down. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The Secretary of the Navy has been fired over the case of a Navy SEAL facing a disciplinary proceeding. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
The Pentagon says Navy Secretary Richard Spencer submitted his resignation at the request of Defense Secretary Mark Esper, who it says had lost trust and confidence in Spencer because of a lack of candor over conversations with the White House involving the handling of the SEAL case. President Trump tweeted last Thursday that he would not let the Navy take away Chief Petty Officer Edward Gallagher's Trident pin, which designates him a SEAL. But at an international security forum Saturday, Spencer said he did not consider a tweet to be an order, and it would take a formal order to stop the Navy Review Board, which is set to meet December 2nd, to consider Gallagher's case. Gallagher was acquitted of murder in the 2017 stabbing death of a captured Islamic State militant in Iraq, but a military jury did convict him of posing with the corpse. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Security forces used live ammunition and tear gas to disperse protesters in southern Iraq Sunday, killing at least 13 people, wounding dozens more. Anti-government protests have been erupting all across the oil-rich south since October as demonstrators continue to demand an end to corruption and improved services. In Basra Sunday, seven people were killed in what one security official called one of the worst days of the protest movement. Four others were killed in another province, and one person was killed, and two more, Iraq's state news agency said. Devin Nunes, the top Republican on the Congressional Committee investigating U.S. President Donald Trump, refused to answer questions Sunday as to whether he met with a former Ukrainian official to gather information on the son of former Vice President Joe Biden. Nunes has repeatedly denounced the impeachment inquiry proceedings, which are focused on whether Mr. Trump inappropriately pressured Ukraine to open investigations. Proceedings led by Democrats will continue, while some continue to line up for the Democratic nomination to challenge President Trump. VOA's Arash Arabasadi explains.
After a second week of televised hearings in the impeachment inquiry of President Trump, Democrats in Washington say they have proof of misconduct.
The president has used his office for his own personal gain, and in doing so, undermined the national security of the United States.
I will begin by swearing you in.
Several key witnesses have so far refused or been ordered by the Trump White House not to testify. President Trump dismissed the merits of the investigation. Also Sunday, former New York City mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg announced his candidacy for president of the United States. Bloomberg is one of more than a dozen candidates running for the Democratic nomination. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting is underway in Sunday's Guinea-Bissau presidential election. Meanwhile, Namibians vote this Wednesday in presidential election.
I say foregone conclusion, President Gangob is going to win it, but this time around, SWAPO, the ruling party, might get lesser percentage than before.
Phil Yanangolo is the executive director of Namibia's largest human rights organization. The death toll from Saturday's landslide in Kenya's West Pokot County has risen to at least 50. And the new executive director of the UN AIDS agency says it is possible to end the epidemic as a public health threat by 2030.
We have the plan in terms of the tools for prevention. However, what is keeping people away from the science is actually the social norm as well as the laws that discriminate.
Winnie Byanyima is the new executive director of UNIT, and Zimbabwe's vice president returns home from a health trip. But there is a controversy over who did not go to the airport to welcome him. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway in Sunday's Guinea-Bissau presidential election, where incumbent president José Mário Vaz is seeking re-election for another 5 years. A total of 12 candidates contested, including main challenger and former Prime Minister Domingos Simões Pereira. Analysts say Mr. Vaz, whose first term was tarnished by political infighting, including the sacking of his prime minister just weeks before Sunday's vote, is likely to face a strong challenge. Preliminary results are expected on November 28, and if no candidate receives more than 50% of the vote, a runoff between the two top candidates will take place on December 29. The people of Namibia will vote this Wednesday in presidential election in which President Hage Geingob is seeking a second and final term. Phil Yanangolo, the executive director of Namibia Rights, the country's largest human rights organization, says while President Geingob is expected to win re-election, his margin of victory will likely be smaller due to voter discontent with the economy. Some Namibians are also concerned about what they say is the government's failure to fight corruption. Namibia's fisheries minister, Bernard Isao, was released Sunday after a high court judge ruled that the warrant for his arrest was invalid. He was arrested Saturday for alleged involvement in awarding fishing licenses to an Icelandic firm in return for bribes. Yanagalo says the prosecutors have to get another warrant because there is enough evidence to the allegations against the minister.
I can confirm what you just said, that the Minister of Fisheries was indeed arrested yesterday, but an urgent application was made in the High Court to secure his release for the reason that the warrant for his arrest was indeed proved to be invalid.
The fact that the court says that the warrant is invalid, what is the prosecution going to do?
Well, they have to obtain a valid warrant for his arrest. The fact is, there are indeed prima facie evidence that the minister and others, he's not alone, there is another minister and three other persons who were also involved. There is prima facie evidence that they are indeed guilty of bribery in the fishing industry.
Of course, presidential election is the 27th, which is on Wednesday. Tell us, first of all, about that election, because I think one of the criticisms of this current government is that of corruption.
The government in Namibia have always been corrupt. It's not only now. It's a culture. You have heard similar things being said in Angola. You have heard about similar things in South Africa, state capture. The same here right in Namibia. It did not start yesterday or with this current government. It started way back, 30 years ago.
The president, President Geingob, is being challenged by, 9 different candidates. What are the chances here that any of these can make a dent, or do you think that this election that President Gingob is going to win it?
It's a foregone conclusion that President Gingob is going to win it. The question is to what extent, but they are definitely going to win it. The Human Rights Monitoring and Advocacy Organization believe that this time around, SWAPO, the ruling party, might get lesser percentage than before because people in this country are really angry, first about corruption on the part of the governing SWAPO party, and they are seemingly now turning to vote for opposition political parties. And this is the basis for us believing that although SWAPO is certainly going to win, they are going to win with much reduced majority.
Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you very much, James Buddy.
Phil Yanangalo is the executive director of Namibia's largest human rights organization. He was speaking with us from the capital, Windhoek. The death toll from Saturday's landslide in Kenya's West Pokot County has risen to at least 50, according to the Kenyan Standard newspaper. The mudslide and flooding caused by heavy rains have also left thousands hopeless. Officials said rescue operations were continuing on Sunday. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, some of the injured are receiving treatment at nearby hospitals, while many more were still missing.
The heavy rains that are being experienced in the country have caused havoc in West Pokot County as daily operations, including transport, brought to a standstill. The road that connects Kenya to South Sudan has been rendered impassable as all roads and bridges were cut off. West Pokot Governor John Lonyangapuo said that rescued persons are temporarily camping at schools and churches that are safe to reside at.
As you can see, we have been hit by the worst disaster ever witnessed in West Pokot. Rain came and poured the whole night, and all the roads were cut off. We have over 1,000 vehicles that have been rendered immobile. They are already stuck. Those are going to Lodwa, to Southern Sudan. The worst of all is the human loss we have seen.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, condoling with the affected families in a statement, said that all residents living in landslide-prone areas in the country to be relocated. A resident who managed to escape death but lost her three children, Leah, narrates the horrible situation that she encountered. I called everyone. None of them responded. I then called my in-law. He heard me. He came and pulled my hand, but I told them to pull my head. My kid that I was breastfeeding had already died, and the two that were sleeping in a different room, they died too. The most affected areas are Tawaka, Nyarkulian, and Tapach, which took heavy casualties from the tragedy. West Pokot County Commissioner Okello Apollo appeals to well-wishers to offer relief to the affected persons as heavy rains hinders the rescue operations.
We are appealing to well-wishers and the other organizations to come to the aid of those who are affected. We are not able to reach the places where landslide has taken place because of the fact that the weather is very bad.
Governor Lonyangapuo says people living in areas that can experience landslide to move before the tragedy strikes.
People who are now in their homes, we can't reach them. There's nothing we can do. But we are just calling our neighbors to move around. And number two, I've also given an order. Anybody living in areas that can easily be attacked by heat, by landslide, to move. The army is also coming with mobile bridges so that the areas that have been cut off be accessible.
The Meteorological Department of Kenya has warned of heavy rain throughout the week as regions likely to be affected in the country include Western, Eastern, Northeastern and Central regions, including Nairobi. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Today is Monday, November 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's 63-year-old Vice President Constantino Chiwenga returned home on Saturday, looking healthier than when he left 4 months ago for medical treatment in China. He arrived in a chartered Chinese plane and was met on arrival at the Robert Gabriel Mugabe International Airport by the Chinese Deputy Ambassador to Zimbabwe, as well as
members of Chiwenga's family. The arrival sparked rumors of a split between President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his vice president. Tabitha Kumalo is chairperson of the opposition movement for democratic change.
Actions speak louder than the words. So it confirms that, obviously, there must be friction between Mnangagwa and Chiwenga. It does not make sense that a deputy ambassador of China goes and picks up Chiwenga from the airport and the ZANU-PF are not there. As Zimbabweans, we know that when Mugabe was sick, every time he came back home, they used to bus people to the airport and people would be singing and praising their leader. So this time around, it was shocking that no ZANU-PF members were at the Robert Mugabe airport, meaning to say definitely there is a rift between the two.
But some ZANU-PF members are saying that this kind of fanfare, which is always at the airport, is only set aside for the president and not the vice president.
Well, that's not true, because Chiwenga is the vice president of Zimbabwe, and he can act as the president, so there's no difference. The only difference that is the incumbent president is there. And our typical ZANU-PF, they will always tell you what you want to hear. So to us, that is smokescreen, and what is there is that there is a huge fight between Mnangagwa and Chiwenga.
What could be the fight all about, Ms. Kumalo?
Mnangagwa and his team used Chiwenga and the army to remove Mugabe from power during the impeachment time. So obviously, the fact that they managed to help Mnangagwa to remove Mugabe, they must have made deals between Mnangagwa and Chiwenga. And our understanding is that Chiwenga also wants to be a president. So obviously, the promises that were given to Chiwenga and Mnangagwa during impeachment, they are starting now. So what it means is that we have to expect fireworks from ZANU-PF, Mnangagwa faction and the Chiwenga faction.
Tabitha Kumalo is the chairperson of the opposition movement for democratic change, led by Nelson Chamisa. She spoke from Bulawayo with Gibbs Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. But former Zimbabwe ZANU-PF lawmaker Malachi Nkomo says speculations of a split between President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his vice president Constantino Chiwenga are misleading.
People should not try to raise dust where there's no dust. The issue here is that, for example, he went out of the country when he was not feeling well, and now he's back in the country. I don't think it's something that people should actually sit down and start discussing about. Let us look at the fact that our vice president was not feeling well. Now he's back. And it could be a family arrangement that they don't want anybody to know about it. And secondly, the issue of bringing these issues like the bad blood between the president and vice president, that's not true. What we know is that it's only the president who can actually be welcomed by Nepi ZANU-PF supporters, according to protocol. For people to say people did not go there because there's bad blood between the vice president and the president, that's not true.
But people are reading this through, you know, the way the arrival was actually conducted. They are saying that Mr. Chiwenga was actually welcomed by the deputy Chinese ambassador to Zimbabwe. And to them, that's very strange.
What I'm saying to you is like, it could have been the vice president's choice that he wants to come, whether he wants to be welcomed by so many people, or it was just a family secret that he has to get into the country, because he got out of the country when he was not feeling well. So it could be up to his own decision that he just wanted to land into this country without so much people raising so much eyebrows.
People basically are saying there's a serious rift between Mr. Chiwenga and Mr. Mnangagwa. In ZANU-PF, are you seeing any kind of friction along those lines?
This could be a making for enemies of ZANU-PF who wants to see the party being divided. As far as we know, ZANU-PF is well intact. There is nothing that can be said is bringing rift between our presidium. Our presidium is very intact and it's very tight. I don't think there can be anything that can be said there's bad blood between the president and the vice president. We, as ZANU-PF supporters, we are so happy with our president. We are so happy with our vice president.
Malachi Nkomo is a former ZANU-PF lawmaker who is speaking with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service from West Nicholson, Matabele, South Province. The new executive director of the United Nations AIDS Agency, UNAIDS, says it's possible to end the disease as a public health threat by 2030. But Winnie Bianyima says while the science is there to make it possible, the fight to end the epidemic is both a human rights and social justice struggle. This coming Sunday, December 1st, is World AIDS Day, and the theme of this year's commemoration is Communities Making the Difference. Tomorrow, Tuesday, in Nairobi, Kenya, Ms. Bian Yiman will launch a new report highlighting the importance of communities in the fight against HIV/AIDS. She says communities have been and continue to be the lifeblood of an effective AIDS response.
Well, if we go back to when this epidemic was at its height and AIDS was a death sentence, it was ordinary people affected by the epidemic, either themselves being HIV positive or members of their families or their friends, who got up and started to provide support to those who were suffering from AIDS. And they then also spoke out and demanded for treatment and care for people who were HIV positive. It all started with communities. It took people in their communities to draw government attention to set up this organization, which I now lead, UNAIDS.
And I wanted you to just give us a little report card on HIV/AIDS globally, and particularly Africa, in terms of the new infections, the treatment, and the number of deaths.
You know, in Africa, it is very sad because for African governments, they must reckon with the fact that they do not give women, girls of Africa, their equal rights. And that is why the rate of infection among them is much higher than that of men. And that has to do with our social norms. What do I mean? I mean that a woman and a girl hasn't got a right under control of her own body, that she often, her first sexual encounter is forceful, is with someone she has not chosen to love, to have sex with. So governments have to face up to that and assert the equal rights of women. In law and in society, we must end this pandemic by 2030, as governments committed at the UN in the SDGs. But we won't end it unless we protect our girls and our women in Africa.
You mentioned the Sustainable Development Goal, number 3. The United Nations hopes to end the AIDS epidemic by 2030. Do you think this is achievable? And what do you see as some of the challenges?
Absolutely. It is achievable. I've spoken with a scientist. I spoke to Professor Tony Fauci, prominent scientist in America, who has contributed to the fight against AIDS in the science world. He's told me that we have the science in terms of the tools for prevention. However, what is keeping people away from the science is actually the social norm, that is the attitudes, beliefs, and practices of society, as well as the laws that criminalize, that discriminate against women and girls in Africa, gay people, the LGBTQ communities, sex workers. If we can get it right for those key populations in terms of law, making them equal, enjoy equal rights and equal access to health, we can end the pandemic. I'm sure of that. So it's a human rights struggle. It's a struggle for social justice, for groups on the margin.
December 1st is World AIDS Day. Any particular message for the global community about this disease?
My main message is that we can't beat AIDS by 2030. We have the science. We have the tools for prevention. We need to remove the remaining barriers to those for whom human rights are denied. But let's also roll out more of the science, because if we know there are combinations that can prevent young girls and women in Africa from being infected, such as keeping girls in school, giving credit to young women to get a good income and protect themselves, combining sexual reproductive health with HIV/AIDS services, so it is achievable, we can use the science, we can roll interventions for prevention, we can help more people to prevent themselves from getting infected.
Ms. Bian Yiman, thank you very much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa. And once again, congratulations on your appointment as the new executive director of UNAIDS. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, James Bati. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Munibi Anyima is the new executive director of the United Nations HIV/AIDS Agency. She was speaking with us from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in France, where Olympic marathon champion and world marathon record holder Eliud Kipchoge is the 2019 World Athletics Male Athlete of the Year. 35-year-old Eliud Kipchoge beat four other contestants to retain the award during the World Athletics Gala in Monaco on Saturday night. Kipchoge earlier in the year won the London Marathon in a course record of 2 hours, 2 minutes, 37 seconds before making history as the first man to run the marathon under 2 hours when he completed the Amores 159 challenge in Vienna, Austria in 1 hour, 59 minutes, 40.2 seconds on October 12th this year.
I hope I inspired a lot of generation. It was about human family, and I trust that from today onwards, everybody will be positive in life. And in general, I'm really happy for making history.
From athletics to basketball, where the draw ceremony for the second round Elite 16 of the Basketball African League 2020 qualifying tournament was held at a house of basketball in the Ivorian capital city of Abidjan this past weekend. The 16 teams were divided into two groups of G and F of 8 teams each, and games will be played in Yaounde, Cameroon, and Kigali in Rwanda. Group games will take place in Yaounde from November 26th to December the 1st, while Group H will take place in Kigali from December 17th to December the 22nd, 2019. The top two teams from each group will advance to the semifinals, where the teams that finish in the first three places will qualify for the Basketball African League regular season in March 2020. In golf news, the Gary Player Invitational, the world's leading charity golf series, which currently stages 6 annual events in the UAE, USA, China, Japan, UK, and South Africa, has helped the Player Foundation raise more than $64 million for impoverished children around the world. The South African leg of the 2019 Gary Player Invitational, which ended this weekend at Sun City in Rustenburg, South Africa, was the event's 20th anniversary. Xander Lombard and his team, including Irish pop star Brian McFadden, were this year's tournament winners. Some of those who took part in this year's tournament in South Africa recount their experiences.
We need to make the sacrifices, and for me, giving back to the community and to upcoming golfers, I mean, I'll do it over and over and over again.
The amount of kids' lives that he's changing in South Africa, in the UAE, in London, in the USA, and how he's continually got that spirit of giving is absolutely phenomenal.
And that does it for Monday's edition of Daybreak Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting is underway in Sunday's Guinea-Bissau presidential election, where incumbent President José Mário Vaz is seeking re-election for another 5 years. A total of 12 candidates contested, including main challenger and former Prime Minister Domingos Pereira. Analysts say Mr. Vaz, whose first term was tarnished by political infighting, including the sacking of his prime minister weeks before Sunday's vote, is likely to face a strong challenge. And that is it for this Monday, November 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.
On December 5th, Border Crossings will bring you the greatest songs inspired by the soul genre. You'll hear smash hits from Three Dog Night, Holland Oates, and George Michael. If you like these tracks, you'll love our Soul Inspirations theme. December 5th on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.